Hello and welcome to another edition of Kaleidoscope. This is Magda Zenon, recording from the awesome studios of the Mama More podcast. Thank you, Eleni, for hosting us. And with me, I have Kainat Riaz. Welcome, Kainat.
Thank you very much for having me.
Kainat, to introduce you to the listeners, Kainat is an education advocate and, more importantly, a woman's education advocate. She's an United World College Atlantic alumni, and she was a keynote speaker at the recent United for Peace EU-UWC Youth Leadership Forum in Cyprus. That's what I'm going to say about you. Now you can introduce yourself.
Okay. So I am Kainat Riaz. I'm a global youth ambassador. I'm a 26-year-old woman. I'll be turning 27 next month. And I'm a global youth ambassador working with a different organization. I am a co-founder of Bedar Society back in Pakistan, working for women rights, girls education, and empowering women. I'm really glad to be here and talking to you today.
It's really awesome to meet you. And you've always been an education advocate. You were, as a young girl, you lived in Swat in Pakistan, in Swat Valley in Pakistan. You had a father that wanted you to go to school, and you went to school. But October the 9th, 2012, changed your life.
Exactly.
Tell us about that day.
Okay, so I was going back from school to my home, and on the way our van stopped. So one person came in the front of the van and one at the back, and asking who is Malala, because Malala was the time raising her voice for girls' education, and she was empowering women and create awareness about education. And that time we were having quite a difficult time, so for women it was quite difficult to go to school. So she was doing quite a lot of work for education, girls' education, and kind of risking her life. So,
to remind the leaders, that period in Pakistan was a horrendous period under the Taliban.
Exactly.
Horrendous to the extent there were dead bodies in the street, people were being beheaded.
Slaughtering,
It was a very violent period. So Malala was risking her life,
definitely, I must say that. And the guy came in, stepped into the van and asking, who is Malala? And of course, he knew who Malala is, and then he started shooting. So in that incident...
But maybe inadvertently... You all looked at her.
Yeah, definitely. We looked at her.
I think no one said her name, but I think you automatically, we would all
and
do it.
And the guy was holding, a pistol in his hand. So, of course, we were like a bit, I don't know. That was kind of a moment. We didn't know what to say, what to do. And everybody looked at her. And then he started shooting straight away because Malala was not covering her face. Mm. So, So then he started shooting. And in that shooting, Malala got shot on her head. And my friend and I, we got shot on our shoulder. And I got shot on my right shoulder.
I think the headline was 4 bullets, 3 schoolgirls, point blank rage.
Yes, that's correct.
Malala was shot first, then your friend got 2 shots, and then you were shot last.
Yes, that's correct.
And he disappeared.
Exactly.
He's never been caught?
Yes, he was. He was in...
Was he caught?
Yeah, he was caught. And I think he's still in the jail.
But what was interesting is that his sister actually denounced him. She announced publicly that he's no longer her brother because he has brought shame to the family, which even she was being very, very brave.
Yeah, exactly.
Even she was being very brave.
Yeah, that's true.
Tell me what happened afterwards, because, of course, Malala was the more crucially wounded because he shot her in the head.
Yeah.
You were shot in the...
Right shoulder.
Right shoulder.
Yeah.
And Shaiza was in her hand and her collar.
That's correct.
So you were taken to hospital, two of you.
They took me to the... Actually, no. I came home and I was like... saying one thing continuously, that Malala is dead. Malala is dead. Because, of course, she got shot and she was on the floor on the van, and there was like blood everywhere. And I knew that I got shot and I was holding my right shoulder and I was so scared that the guy's going to come back and shoot me. So because of this fear, I didn't want to go to the hospital. So when I came home, my mom and dad, they were not at home, but my brother and my sister-in-law, they were home, and I was saying one thing continuously. And then when my mom came in, and I was telling my mom, like, Malala is dead, Malala is dead. And I feel like I was in trauma because what I have seen it earlier, I was like, I didn't know what to say. And
when you see an injury like that, someone shot in the head, why would you assume they're going to survive?
Exactly. Yeah, that's correct.
Unless they've got a spirit like Malala, but yeah, that's a different story.
Exactly. So when I was telling my mom that Malala is dead, my mom said, okay, Malala will be fine, but you need to go to the hospital because you are bleeding. And I said, like, no, I can't go to the hospital because what if the guy come back and he shoot me? And my mom said, like, no, he's not going to come back for you because you haven't done anything. And it's like, no, but still, what if he come back and shoot me? So then took me to the hospital. They treated me for my right shoulder. They took out the bullet. And I was there, then came back home. And I had my other, like, you know, the rest of the treatment at home because I was too scared to stay in the hospital.
Well, it's very traumatic, someone jumping on your bus with their head covered with guns. You eventually found out that Malala was alive, but you and Shazia both went back to school.
Yes, after a month time.
And what was that day like?
I think because I wanted to go to school, and I know what happened completely changed my life. And we had two security guards all the time in our home. Whenever we were going for shopping or school or going anywhere, they were always coming to with us. So when we wanted to go back, my father was looking for a driver for me who take me to school. And unfortunately, nobody was, you know, willing to take us. And that was like the time I said, like, I haven't done anything wrong. I just want to go to school and continue with my education. And of course, later on, I realized that, you know, what Malala started, she's not here anymore. And of course, education is something really important and I need to do something for it. And of course, everybody knew about me, you know. So I wanted to continue with my activism and educating. And, you know, there's another story came up there. After 3 months later, when I was like a very, everybody knows about me, I was kind of a public figure in Pakistan, and I was in social media, on media everywhere, and then I was getting threats from the Taliban.
Yes.
Yeah. So, like, they were threatening my father and following my father and telling my father to, you know, to...
Take her out
exactly,
of school.
That she, you know, she needs to stop. And... we were not, like, I'll be very honest, I was not taking these things really seriously. And then suddenly we had a bomb blast behind our house where two people died in that incident, my friend and her grandmother.
Oh.
And unfortunately, the community people were, you know, they were really scared and they were asking us to leave because they were not feeling safe because of me. So this was like a kind of a tragic story again happened in my life. And I was already going through quite a lot of trauma. And then this happened. And it was kind of a lot of, like, I was struggling mentally. I didn't know what to do.
You were 15 years old.
Yeah, that's correct.
I mean, I'm not surprised. Even an adult would have been struggling. But that's when the United World College came to your rescue.
Yes. When I got a phone call from Gordon Brown, who is the former Prime Minister of UK and who gave me the opportunity, and Shazia as well, and they were giving us a chance to come to UWC. That time it was kind of difficult for me to make my decision because I was very young.
And traumatized.
And, you know, when everything is happening in your life, of course, you don't know what to do. My mom and dad, you know, they took some time to think what will be the best decision. So my father said, I think this is the best time for you to leave this country because if you go away somewhere, I think these things are going to be stopped. And
to take you out of the situation.
Exactly.
And keep you safe.
It was much safer for me to go to the UWC, get a high quality of education and to continue with what I was, you know, wanting. So, yeah.
And as you said, I read it somewhere that after the shooting, mm-hmm. your revenge for the shooting was to continue your education.
That's correct.
And to put the listeners into the picture, the United World College is a group of last 2 years of high school education system.
Mm-hmm.
They're around the world.
Yeah.
They offer scholarships or partial scholarships, and it's not based on grades. They just need you to be able to pass the IB.
Exactly.
But they they offer a diversity. They're looking for diverse students. Mm-hmm. They're offering scholarships from people that are royalty to refugees.
Right.
They do not discriminate.
No.
And they also focus, because I was at your conference and I was very inspired by the young people. They also focus on things that are topical, like climate change,
mm-hmm.
or they're different areas of focus. So this was the environment that you were taken to.
Yeah.
But as a Pakistani young woman,
exactly,
you didn't speak English.
No.
But you went to Cardiff. So exactly. Tell us about that.
Okay, so the first time, when it was on the 20th of September, I still remember the date.
So this was
2013.
So this was almost a year after the shooting.
Yes, that's correct. So on the 20th of September, when I had my flight from Islamabad to Cardiff, London, and then from London, I went in a bus with my friend and my house parent from UWC Atlantic College. They took me on the bus from London to Atlantic College. And of course, it took us quite a long time. I must say it was 8 or 9 hours. I don't remember exactly. And I was like on the way, all the way I was thinking, I can't speak English, how I will communicate? And I was seeing, people in the bus reading books in English and, they were chatting and stuff. So anyway, I couldn't speak English by then. And I was I was kind of struggling academically, socially, and of course, a totally different environment, culture, food, everything, the weather even,
weather's the biggest
exactly. So I think it was like a huge change for me. And still, again, with the trauma, missing my family, homesick, and, everything was together. But when I went to UWC Atlantic College, the first 3 nights, I must say, it was the hardest time in my life.
But you also had your friend Shazia with you.
That's correct. She went before me. She stayed for the summer camp, which she learned English somehow. But I was like with no English. And even like when I was looking at her, she faced a different level of, problem when she came, when she arrived there. But for me, she was there. So at least I was not that lonely compared to her, but still with no English, struggling. But then again, I got a lot of support from my teachers, my friends, my house parents, and it really helped. So yeah.
Tell me, when you left after the incident, mm-hmm. what were your feelings for the Taliban?
I think, I was like so helpless, feeling very helpless. I wanted to do something. I wanted to tell them that just like, why are they stopping us when we were having kind of that conflict, this thing, when we were displaced for a couple of months from Swat Valley, they were like, there was a bomb blast shooting and, there was like kind of a fighting between Taliban and Pakistani army. Mm-hmm. And they were trying to, to have a peace, peaceful environment. And I think that time I just wanted to go and tell and to do something that all these things need to be stopped. Because when we were going to school, we didn't go to school for quite a few months when we were displaced.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it was kind of a different story. I must say it was very difficult for me to do something because there was nothing in my hand.
Exactly. Tell me, why is the Taliban so against educating women? Are they scared?
No, I think they believe they think that women should stay at home, and they have a family. They look after the home and kids, and this is what they believe. And they think that in Islam, of course, we said we need to cover our body and stuff, and this is correct, and I agree with that. But what they believe is that women should stay at home. I don't know why, but
that's not part of the Quran.
No, definitely
not.
In a Quran, Quran said men and women, they both get education, and this is our right. So no, in the Quran, there is nothing something like that.
I mean, that's the weird part of the Muslim world, that there's this impression that gender equality is part of the religion, and it's not.
No, definitely not.
The Quran does not.
Some people are really extremist, but no, definitely no. In a Quran, we should learn. And if whatever we learn, we need to spread and we need to share that with other people as well.
And I mean, it's looking really even worse for the woman in Afghanistan now.
Yes, Afghanistan.
Okay. So So you went to, in 2013, to UWC Atlantic.
Yeah.
How long did it take you to fit in, to feel as if you fit in?
I think it took me about 1 to 2 years, I must say, when I was doing like my stuff independently, completely, when I was participating in stuff. And I thought, yes, now I can do that. And when I was in my first year, then because of my English, I was struggling academically, and I was lucky enough to give me another opportunity to do the pre-IB diploma, which I did. And then when I started the IB diploma, so I was there for at least like 4 years.
Okay.
And I think I must say the first 2 years was just in the beginning. The pre-diploma was quite still good. I learned so much. But then when I was a first year, I was capable of doing so many things completely independent. I became a food rep. I became a, you know.
Suddenly you found yourself.
Exactly. That's
found
correct.
Yourself and you UWC, found the things that are important.
Definitely. And I must say UWC changed my life entirely, you know, completely. I'm a completely new human being after that. I learned so much in that 4 years, and I'm so grateful for all the support and help I got there.
As I said to you, I was at the conference for most of the weekend, mm-hmm. and just listening to the young people,
yeah.
firstly, it made me feel younger, but just listening to the people and listening to the curriculums and listening to the diversity, because I feel, especially in Cyprus, mm-hmm. the education is more focused on the academic,
that's correct.
I think that's wrong.
I think, yeah.
I think you need to do drama, you mm-hmm. need to do art, you need to That's do good. Gardening, mm-hmm. you need to do anything with athletics. You need to know, learn social skills.
Exactly.
So and I think the purely academic is...
Not just enough, I must say.
No, it's not enough.
No, because in UWC...
It doesn't make... Yeah. For balanced human beings.
Yes, exactly. Mm. Of course, we are going to school, but other than that, when we are at home, we do other things as well. As you said, gardening, cleaning, and, you know, like meeting new people and doing other activities. And we need to be, you know, we need to learn these skills as well.
Mm.
So in UWC, they give us the opportunity to learn academically, improve academically, but also to know these social skills as well and to improve yourself in that. So we had a services and activities, which in my first year, I did the environmental, which I learned a lot about gardening mm. and, you know, planting and how to look after plants and stuff. But then in my second year, I became social justice, which I was going away from, you know, to the care home and to go to elderly people's houses and stuff. And, you know, just chat with them, communicating and just, you know, It was really interesting for me. So I learned swimming, which is the biggest thing ever. I had a phobia from water and I was so scared of water, but then I managed to learn swimming. So I'm a good swimmer now.
That's right. In Cyprus, you went to the beach.
Exactly. So yeah, I learned so much, not academically, but socially and about me as well. Like I know who I am now. So.
But I think the fact that you did the gardening in your first year, gardening is very therapeutic.
Exactly. Yeah.
At feeling the sand
and dirt in, yeah.
The dirt and putting your fingers in
exactly.
and seeing that the plants growing mm-hmm. or dying or whatever.
Yeah.
It's very therapeutic. I've exactly. discovered it recently.
Yeah.
Very late, but
yeah.
Tell me, have you any fears left over? Did UWC help you with the trauma? Because the trauma was great.
Yeah.
You went there after an assassination attempt. Mm-hmm. Seeing your friend almost killed
yeah.
and a bomb blast a month later
yeah.
that killed people. Has it left anything in you?
I think
besides the revenge to get a better indication.
I think in the beginning I was a bit, you know, I mean, in the beginning it was quite difficult for me and it was so hard to cope with this stress and, you know, the trauma and stuff. But then the support I got from my teachers, schools and friends and everybody, and Gordon Brown, Sarah Brown, who are very close friends of mine and who really supports me in every steps in my life. I'm so, so grateful for that. So when I got this many supports, and not only Gordon Brown and Sarah Brown, but like, you know, my sponsors, my, you know, everybody who involved in my life, you know, the support I got really gave me the courage to continue with what I was doing. And it really healed timely because I was like, whenever I wanted to talk to somebody, they were always there for me. So I chat and, you know, you know, slowly I overcome of everything. So yeah, it was kind of.
How often did you go back to Pakistan after when you went to the UK? Uh-huh. How often did you go back to Pakistan?
Every summer and every winter. But in the beginning, I was not, you know, I wouldn't tell people that I'm coming back. I kept it like a secret because of my own safety, for my family's safety. But then later on, when it was much safer, then I just went back and forth. So yeah, every summer, every Christmas.
Tell me, what is your relationship with Malala and Shazia now?
So they are very close friends of mine, both of them. And I'm so close to them. And if, you know, of course, I see Shazia more than Malala. But if I see Malala, you know, it's just, it's another level of happiness and a bonding we got, like we share. So we're just going to sit there, chat and have so much fun. If I'm there for 1 hour, if I'm there for 1 week, we're just going to have the best life. And I feel like they are the one who are there. And I can trust them in any ways if I need any advice or if I'm stressed or if I need to share something with, like, I trust them fully and I know that they're always there for me. So yeah,
I know that the two of you were frontline when she got her Nobel Peace Prize, Malala.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, this, it's a bond that can either break you, what you went through on October the 9th can either break you as friends,
yeah,
or it's going to turn you into one.
Yeah, I think that turned us to one. And I am so grateful that I got both of them in my life.
Tell me a little bit about your Bayader NGO, the one that you do to empower the people in Pakistan, especially the women, because I think that's what you're almost focused on now.
So I'm one of the co-founders of Bayader Society. I'm working with Hussein Haider and HIPAA. It's kind of a family organization, and we are working for education. We are working for, you know, empowering women and create awareness, improving education. And at the moment, there are quite a lot of things happening with Bayader. So we are working for, again, for all these issues we are having in Pakistan.
Issues like what?
Like education. Mm. And for example, empowering, like, you know, empowering women, create awareness. And some people are, you know, they want to, for example, education back home is like improved so much, but still there are still some bits and bobs we need to work on it. And Bayader is doing, like, you know, what we are doing for that, to improve that, and also giving opportunity to people to, you know, stand up for themselves, and to get education and the importance of education. And yeah, so Bayader is like, we are working for these different issues to make this, you know, Pakistan or overall, you know, worldwide, to make life easier and comfortable.
Do you do anything with climate change? Because I know in Southeast Asia, climate change has affected especially the women because of land.
Yeah,
the women do the cultivation. So you're also doing things on climate change and gardening, for a better word, or farming.
Mm-hmm. I think we, at the moment, we are more focusing on education and stuff. Yeah, but definitely, I think not only Bayader, but my friends Hussein Haider and HIPAA, and like, we are involved in other things as well, like Eco Change. This is another organization we are working on. So like, we are focusing on different issues, for example, climate change, education, and yeah, women.
So you can actually, you working with other NGOs and combining. You have since had a family since that fatal day. You got married.
Yes.
And you have a gorgeous little boy.
Yeah.
Who was on his first trip abroad. Yeah, and he's curious, like any normal 2-year-old would be. Where you met your husband at a UN event.
So I was in Pakistan when I met my husband. Actually, I didn't meet my husband then. I was one of the speakers and he was in the audience. And he and his brother, they are the one who organized that event. So they invited me and I was like speaking. So this is how he saw me. And then we started chatting on social media. And then slowly we became in a relationship.
Was he in Pakistan or was he in the
UK? No, he was in Pakistan. And this is how I met his brother as well. So I was very close friend to his brother, who is the founder of Bedar Society.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's why when I said when it's a family organization, because this is Ijlal's brother, my husband's brother.
Okay.
Organization, and I'm one of the co-founder of that organization.
Oh, wow.
So yeah,
it's really a family affair.
Yeah, this is our whole family is working for education and empowerment. So yeah.
And how has becoming a mother changed you?
Oh, I think it was a good change. I'm so happy to have a family like that. I think it's kind of tricky, I must say, because working and all these activities and the education stuff I'm doing, and then family. So I need to be balancing. I need to balance my life somehow, because I need to give some time to my husband's, my family. And then work, and again, what I'm doing out of my work. So,
but just don't stress, because it actually all falls into place.
Yes.
Okay. But it is, it's a challenge. But I think the biggest joy I found when I had my little boy is that suddenly there's a dimension in the world that you see. You hadn't seen it before.
Yeah.
But suddenly when this little human being comes into the world, there's another thing added that's fresh and happy and joyous. And new.
Exactly. As I said, my life changed completely. Every steps of my life, I'm getting something new. And I'm really grateful for that. But in the beginning, I didn't know what to do. Like, a motherhood would be like a bit stressful. But now I am enjoying it. For example, if my son is fussy about stuff he doesn't eat, I will try. But I'm not forcing him to do that, because I know there are some phases. So I know now how to deal with kids. Now I know how to deal with the husbands and home and stuff. So I'm okay.
Anyway, with kids, you learn that there's certain battles that you just don't go into. So if he doesn't want to eat his food.
Exactly. I let him.
He doesn't eat his food.
Exactly.
There's a fridge. There's fruit. If he's hungry, he'll come back later.
Exactly.
I mean, in Greece, and I'm sure it's the same in Cyprus, it's the same in your culture.
Yeah.
You've got to eat. You've got to have a help. Baby's got
to eat.
Exactly,
yeah.
I used to tell my mother-in-law, chill. Leave him. He's not hungry.
Yeah.
He'll come back to me when he's hungry.
Mm-hmm. I think my husband was the main one who was like, oh, he's not eating. He's like overstressed about things, So I need to calm my husband down as well.
He sounds exactly like my ex-husband.
Yeah, my husband is like he's a very anxious person. And I think I learned so much from my husband. He is like, I feel like we have the perfect bonding. Because I learned so much from him when we are going somewhere or overall in, life. If I'm looking at him and spending time with him, every day I'm learning something from him. And same as him, he's learning so much from me. So I feel like we are shared the perfect bonding.
Oh, good. And and having a child adds to that.
Exactly.
It's a challenge. Yeah, true. Because you disagree. Tell me, how are you promoting education? I know you're doing it through your organization.
Yeah.
And I know you're using UWC. But why... And I know the answer, but I want you to say, why is education, especially for girls in your part of the world, important? Why is education important?
I think education is like light, and education is really crucial especially for women, because I'm not discriminating, but just because women plays an important role in a family. And if a woman is educated, I think the whole family will be, completely different. That's why education is really, really crucial for women. So the reason I'm, fighting for education, because many girls who are deprived of education, who don't have access to education, they are struggling. They get married in a very young age, and then they start with a family, and they're, struggling with that social issues and stuff for a long, long time. And they give up on their dreams. So if they have their own dreams, they have the right to, fulfill or to get their dreams what they want in their life, not only continue with the family and stuff. So that's why I believe education is important. So she can give, she can brought her children with the education environment, and she can not only be educated, but she can teach in her, her behavior, and everything is going to be very different compared to the uneducated person. So
I think you become more confident. So you're more confident in yourself.
Yes. Yeah, independent again.
And there it's like what we're saying about feeding your children, that when you have the confidence,
yes,
you know that children don't have to eat three times a day.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. They have bad days like we have bad days. Yes, and they have things correct. They don't eat, or they have tantrums. We have tantrums.
Yeah, true.
So I think when you have the basic knowledge of yourself, which education brings.
Mm-hmm. They give you independency and...
And it also makes you not reactive to situations. Exactly. It makes you more... Okay. I'm sure you've received a number of awards.
Yeah.
Is there any one moment in all of your life, and I don't want you to talk about giving your baby, having your baby, which is a one moment in your life that was really special?
You mean like in the award or just overall?
Both. Give me one award and one overall.
Okay. So when I was getting the Tamghay Shujaat, which is the national award from the president of Pakistan, when I was getting that, it was the best moment. And I, like, you know, I felt something different. I think they really encouraged me and motivated me to do more stuff like this.
So when did you get this award?
I think it was in, I'm sorry, I think it was in 2014.
Okay.
Yeah, 2014. Yes. Sorry, 2013. 2013, okay. Yeah. When I got that one. It was the best moment ever. And I met so many different celebrities. And when I was very young, I really wanted to meet Benazir Bhutto, who I was always been one of
them. Awesome woman.
Exactly. So I was really impressed by her and really inspired. So I didn't get the opportunity to meet her because she's not anymore. But I met her husband and he was the one who gave me that award.
Oh, wow.
And this was like one of the great moment and special memories. And the best thing was, like, I was with my father when I received that award. So, yeah.
Well, I think the fathers in Pakistan that encourage their daughters to go to school are the people that need an award, because they
exactly.
they face a lot of isolation and attack.
Yeah, that's true.
Because they're not the normal Muslim or Pakistani dads. They want their daughters to be strong and independent and confident.
A lot of courage as well.
Yes.
And my father will never, you know, let me sit at home and, you know, do washing and stuff. No, he wants me to be independent. He wants me to be educated. And he wants me to travel around the world and do as much as I can. And my father's always been like that. So
I remember listening to an interview with Malala's father. And he turned around and he says, I don't mind being known as Malala's father.
Exactly.
And which to me, for a Pakistani man, is not something that is usual, because he usually needs, people need to be connected to him, not him connected to people.
Exactly,
And a good moment personally?
Personally, so this was when I was graduating from UWC. Because after a lot of struggle and so much different from, you know, so many things were happening. When I graduated and got my degree, the IB diploma, I believed in myself that, you know, I can do. By then, I had my husband. By the time, we didn't get married. So I felt like I'm a complete family, because my mom and dad was, you know, always there for me. And for all the things I have achieved, I felt like now I can do everything I want. So this was the second moment. And I must say another, when I was having my baby, when I had my baby, we literally cried so much, my husband and I, because it was just something, the first cry of our baby was like totally different experience. It just suddenly we couldn't control ourselves. So it was like a happiness moment, that one. But like achieving-wise, the award in UWC.
And tell me, besides your father, who's your hero or heroine? Because you obviously have a lot of love and respect for your dad, and rightly so. But who else would you consider a hero?
Is it going to be one person or more than that?
Feel free.
Okay. I am always inspired by my mother, because my mother is working with the health department and he has to go to her work early morning and come back at 2 or 3 o'clock. And then the way she was dealing with her work, personal life, and, you know, she's always been there for the whole family as well. If somebody got sick or if somebody's, you know, need my mother's help, she would have been just like a go, you know. So she's a very independent woman. And I must say, you know, back then, before, like in 2013, when there was like a Taliban was there, my mom has been very independent. She is like a fearless woman, I must say.
You inherited her fearlessness.
So, no, I was a very different person. I was very introvert, shy, and very, you know, fearful.
Reserved.
Yes, but I was very reserved person. But now, after UWC and after I got the opportunity to come abroad, changed my life completely. But before that, I was very, very...
Reserved
person, yeah.
Okay, who else?
And then the second person is Sarah Brown, who is... also kind of my sponsor, who really supported me in my dreams and the work she's doing in her life with their world and, you know, working for peace and education. I think I'm really inspired by her work. And I want to be like Sarah Brown, whatever she's doing. She's amazing. She's amazing. I can't even tell you. Yeah.
Well, you're lucky you've been blessed with, in spite of what happened mm-hmm. in 2012, you've been blessed with a lot of good people coming yeah. in to support you and to raise you.
Yeah.
Because we're coming to the end of this interview, tell me what message you would like to pass on.
So I would give an advice or a message to the young people that never give up. Just keep, you know, keep going and just keep dreaming and try to get your dreams. Just don't wait for others to come and speak for you. Just be the one who can stand up for themselves and who not only for yourself, but also for others who are deprived or who doesn't have access to education, who doesn't have access to, you know, peaceful environment. Mm-hmm. Just try to do something. And I think as a youth, we can do much more than that. So we need to continue with that and listening, contributing, listen to each other. Try to do as much as you can. I think one or two people will say, oh, we can't make a difference. Yes, we do. Because if each person do some tiny stuff, but as a whole, we can make a big change.
Well, my message would be, because you young and I'm old, is that us older generation mm-hmm. have got to stop saying, we're doing this for you in the future.
Yeah.
You are here now. You mm-hmm. have a voice now.
Exactly.
And now we've got to start listening to you.
Yes.
Because somewhere we went wrong.
Yeah.
Somewhere we went, okay, there were a lot of good times, but we've actually got to learn mm-hmm. to work together.
Yeah.
Because my age doesn't give me a privilege of I know what's right and what's wrong.
Yeah.
Things have changed. The world has shifted. So mm-hmm. my message would be the youth need to be speak louder because they are the present. They're not the future.
True.
They are also the future, but they are the present.
Present, yes.
Okay.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Kainat.
No worries.
Thank you for being with me. You really are an inspiration, and
thank
it's
you.
Nice to see such a pleasant demeanor despite what's happened in the past, which is what your family has done for you as well. Yeah. And so thank you for being with me.
No worries. Always
thank
a pleasure.
Thank you to the listeners for listening. Thank you to Mama More Podcast for giving us the studio. And to the listeners, listen on and stay safe. Thank you.
Thank you.
The first trilingual podcast station of Cyprus. Island Talks. Open. Diverse. Free.